You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time, driven by Continental and MLS Soccer.com. I am David Goss. As we wave Andrew Wiebe into his next stage of fatherhood, and he will take a little bit of time off, and I am with my partners in soccer, Kalen Carr, Matt Doyle, and of course, Chuck D. What's up, guys?
Chuck, get ready for a month of that, dude. I'm sorry, Chuck. You're going to have to hear that for a while.
That just doesn't sound right. You need to go with a new phrase for this next month.
How about this is my...
We are partners in soccer again, finally, because we just watched 180 minutes of MLS play, right? So I think you got to stay with it, David. Stay the course.
I'm thinking this is my new permanent open. MLS is back. Oh, wow. I tried to do the ham horn. You can't do the ham horn and a voice memo. That ruined my whole spiel.
Hit it again.
No, I have the voice memo going.
We're not going back.
Yeah, you might as well try it again.
This is the show.
Give it one more go. Just give it one more go.
You guys, this is the most embarrassing moment of my life.
Mm-hmm. Taquito even wants
it. It's literally called a rap air horn, which I don't know why that is. It didn't work. The show is ruined. The show is over, and MLS is actually currently back.
We could have kept it going.
Keep it going. Don't give up. I have hope.
It in post.
I have faith.
I didn't play professional sports for a reason. When it gets hard, I quit. That's how it works, especially when it's hot out. There was no chance I was running around for 90 minutes in the summer out in Houston. That's how you guys get to excellence, and this is where I sit. But MLS is back. MLS Today will be on every day, 11 a.m. Eastern time throughout the tournament on MLSsoccer.com, Twitter, and Facebook, including right after every scheduled 9 a.m. Eastern time match. Susanna Collins and Kalen Carr will be hosting the bulk of it. They will have Daniel Shallowy on Friday. Myself and Chuck D will be hosting on Saturday. And Jill Sakovitz from The Call-Up will be hosting with Brian Dunseth on Sunday while Doyle rides his bike, watches soccer, and pets his cat. Doyle, you promised us morning games. You're getting miles in on the bike. First one at a go.
Really good. Did 45 minutes, did about 21 miles in 45 minutes. So feeling pretty good about that. Threw in 60 push-ups as well. But by the end of this...
Do you have any receipts for this? Can we...
Yeah. You know what? I'll tweet it out. I'll tweet it out after the show, Kalen.
I'm not doubting you. I'm just, curious.
I mean, to be clear, I keep it...
I'd like to see the heat map.
I keep it at like middle level. I don't do intervals or anything like that. I'm an old man. I don't want to overdo it. But yeah, this is a good start.
Good for you, man.
No, so props.
First morning game, NYCFC Philly, happened earlier this morning. We'll talk about that. Let's start with the first game of MLS's back. First game in over 4 months of Major League Soccer. Orlando versus Inter Miami. A lot to talk about. We'll talk about the demonstration by the Black Players for Change that happened before the game. We're going to interview Kai Kamara in a little bit, who was a part of that protest. We will talk to Frank DeBoer later on. We'll update you on everything going on with Chicago Fire, for Nashville, for FC Dallas, and all the moving pieces, as well as some transfers. But soccer, this is what we've been waiting for. Charlie, Disney plus soccer. It is your perfect place in the world. How good did it feel last night?
It felt good. It felt really good. I had been waiting for this moment for 3 months now. And so I think what was more moving and inspiring was seeing how the players came together before the match and their protests, the demonstration that they showed solidarity coming together in the black gloves, the masks, the black tees, and just you felt it. You know, obviously they stood there in silence for the 8 minutes and 56 seconds or so in honoring George Floyd and his awful death at the hands of the police. So, it's something where I didn't expect it, and it touched me deeply. And, respect to all the players and the coaching staffs that were a part of it, because it really showed that, they're trying to make a difference. You know, there might not be a national anthem to protest to, but they still, I think it was even more apparent what their message was at that point, because it wasn't about the national anthem, and you could still move so many people and touch so many people with what they were able to do.
Definitely a moment that I think was seen around the world, will have an impact. We'll continue this conversation because this is not a conversation or a movement that's going to change the world in 6 weeks. And it, you could feel at times the energy coming down and people starting to shift their lives and shift their attention. And I thought it was really powerful. As you said, the 8 minutes and 46 seconds, it's how long Derek Chauvin had his knee on George Floyd's neck. And you could kind of see people being like, wow, this is a long time. And it's like, if you thought it was a long time to watch people stand silently, imagine how long it takes to do that to a human being. And then the conversation continuing, like, soccer's back, but we're still going to talk about this because of what they did. Kaylin, you've talked with a lot of people who were a part of the demonstration last night. What was your impact of how it happened? And I'm curious, for someone who's been in and around MLS for so long, did you ever think you'd see something like that on an MLS field?
No, I did not. I think the formation of the Black Players for Change is new, but I think the conversations, as Chuck can attest to as well, is just in within locker rooms and quiet corners have been happening for a long time. And it's, so to see it come together from those locker rooms and from those communities into one place, it's a unique situation with them being all quarantined in Orlando for this tournament. But I thought the guys took the opportunity to use it, to use their platform, use their profile and the moment to make it to stand up for Black Lives Matter movement. And, you know, a lot of these guys I've been talking to have been out before this going to protests and being out in the streets. And so to carry that forward was super powerful, as Chuck pointed out. And then I think the way that the Philadelphia Union carried the conversation forward and didn't let it just end at that moment was really powerful too, with having all of the names of, the Black men and women that have died at the hands of police brutality. Because in some ways it's not just a protest, it's education. Like, they're taking, you look up, you see Alejandro Bedoya, you see him score the goal, and then you look at the back of his shirt. And, you know, while I think a lot of people know the name of George Floyd now, because you've seen, so much talked about it, you don't necessarily know about Breonna Taylor, which Ray Gaddis was wearing on the back, and how there's still the police who shot her while she was asleep in her house have not been arrested still in Louisville. So carrying that conversation, making sure that people say their names, I think this is a conversation that's going to keep going. So, yeah, I'm proud of all the guys that have been involved. And I should mention also, because I don't know if that story is really out there yet, but Warren Craval has been designing all of the stuff that you see, from the shirts to the MLS's Black and Black Lives Matter masks to even the ones that the players are wearing, all the players are wearing for Adidas. He designed the back. And it has Jeremy Obobese, some of his writing on the back. So the details, you should look up that story. I think it's on MLSsoccer.com. So check that out as well.
Good plug for MLSsoccer.com right at the end there. Kaylin, always proud of always. You. Doyle, for you, we've talked about soccer a lot and wanting it to come back. But it was, as Charlie said, I think the most poignant part of the night. And it kind of started the tone of, like, this is weird what's happening and this is different what's happening. But I think to Charlie's point, like, it felt good to see that movement in that moment. What was your reaction?
Hope. And the weirdest thing about all of this is, because it was born of watching a man get murdered by the police, which is just devastating, that we're sitting here now, month and a half, almost 2 months later. And I think all of us are maybe a little bit more hopeful than we were 2 months ago, in spite of that. And it has to do with, I don't mean to shine, to take the spotlight off of Black players and Black people, because this is a moment that they started, and seeing everyone from Thierry Henry, who's a global superstar, to, you know, Warren Craval and Ray Gaddis, who have been so instrumental in their communities, and, you know, young kids, players from Africa and South America all standing together with that famous, you know, fist in the air last night. That's where the spotlight belongs. But what makes this all feel different is that it's not just Black America. It's not just Black people talking about this. It's white people. It's Asian people. It's Latinos. This is the first time in my lifetime it really feels like people are understanding that racism is an everyone problem. And racism is not just Black people getting their stuff together. Racism is about the entire world trying to be cognizant of it. And it, like, I think of this, it's an old Malcolm X quote, and I'm going to read it here, where the really sincere white people have got to do their proving of themselves is not among the Black victims, but out on the battle lines of where America's racism really is. And that's in their own home communities. America's racism is among their own fellow whites. That's where sincere whites who really mean to accomplish something have got to work. And I think that is the part of this, like, and it's the kids, it's the Zoomers, and it's the younger millennials who are driving this. And it just fills me with hope, because we're seeing progress in talking about systemic racism and inequality and police brutality in arenas and in a way that I never expected to see in my entire life. So it fills me with hope.
Yeah, we hope that that continues. We'll talk to Kai Kamara in just a moment, because as you said, this is an opportunity to have these conversations, to amplify the voices of the people who have lived their lives fighting this, who have lived their lives working on researching, understanding all of these topics. And that's our opportunity to bring him onto the show. Before we get to him, one quick moment. There was a soccer game that was played right after that. Swagadelo with the first goal in MLS's back. Cash Mueller following it up to equalize. And then who else, Doyle, but the man who always delivers in big moments in the heat for Orlando City and Nani to score the stoppage time winner for the first ever game in the MLS is back tournament. Orlando City with a 2-1 win. And of course, Miami and Orlando facing off for the first time ever. Charlie, from the soccer point of view,
yeah,
we had no idea what to expect. No one has ever done anything like this before. It's even different than what we've seen in Europe in terms of the time of season, the layoff, bringing them to Florida, all of these things. Over the course of two games, that one game, what have you seen? What do you feel about what this tournament's going to be like?
I think I got what I expected. It was more like a glorified preseason game, not what the significance was, but the play, because it was almost like these teams had enough time to build up some sort of fitness to play in a match, but you're not going to get the right fit until you play in these games. And so this is the first game where you saw guys, you know, today especially, you saw guys cramping, going down, cramping left and right. That heat is no joke. And it takes a couple matches to get used to it and just the flow of the game, the rhythm of the game. Some guys have new teammates getting used to that, the tendencies. That first match against Miami or Orlando, it's kind of exactly how I thought it was going to go. They weren't as crisp in the final third. Miami, same problem as before COVID-19 hit. They don't have a striker who can stretch the field, who can create space for them.
They have a goal scorer who starts at number 9.
Yeah, they do.
Hey, if Juan keeps getting two of those chances every game and goes 1-for-2.
Yeah, I guess if that's what if that's what you're looking for. But you know, for me, it's the same problem. They need a little bit more in the final third. For a team like Inter Miami coming in, you would expect with Paul McDonough at the helm that they're going to have players who are entertainers. They don't have to be the biggest names, but guys who are flashy, speed, you know, can beat you on the dribble, technique, stretch the field. They don't have that yet. And that was evident to me in that first match. Orlando, you have Dom Dwyer, who was just kind of running up there. I thought he would have been a little bit more dangerous in the final third. Rust, you could attribute that to rust. You could attribute that to maybe the chemistry is not there with Nani and the rest of the other attackers. But it's a big result for Orlando. I thought they were the better team, and they got the result in the end.
And
it's
we don't know exactly.
Their first ever rivalry win, by the way. It's their first ever rivalry win. So for Orlando City fans, that was a long time coming.
They're undefeated against Tampa, though, so they've got that going for them as well. Doyle, I'm curious now from the Orlando point of view, I think Charlie gave us a little bit about Miami and what went wrong for Orlando. You said it. It's a win. We don't know what their schedule is totally going to look like or their group, but you start with 3 points in a tournament. That's kind of, you know, 101. The percentages just go way high if you start with 3 points. It wasn't a perfect performance, but they got the win. What did you see from Pareja's group?
I mean, there was definitely a little bit of esprit de corps in that group, which is just kind of a hallmark of Oscar Pareja teams. He's very good at getting everybody to, you know, put their hands on the rope and pull in the same direction. And that is something that you've almost never seen from Orlando City over the years. In Nani, they have a match winner. Nani was great, especially down the stretch. And you know, that's what you pay him the money for. Pareja, the number 10, had a couple of moments where you saw his quality, and Chris Mueller just keeps earning minutes. You know, we saw it in the first two games of the season. I thought he was their best player, and then arguably he was their best player in this one as well. So it's, you know, that's the foundation, is just to be solid and try to be as mistake free as possible on the back line and in deep central midfield, and then hope that the match winners find a way to win you the match. I don't think there was anything more complex about it than that. But it's, you know, in a tournament like this, if that's your foundation and you have the 3 points to get out the gate, then you're in a pretty good position. And I think Oscar Pareja is probably smiling today.
Yeah, they minimized mistakes. And then, you know, they capitalized on one late. And I thought they were the stronger team on the wings. And I think early on, it's hard to expect these teams to really have great attacking play and to be really able to work through their patterns of play and how they want to move, you know, just that sharpness moving towards goal. But speed helps in these circumstances. I think that's what Charlie was saying with Miami, is that they just didn't really have a way to stretch the field or get in behind. So when in doubt, if you're able to get isolated on the wings the way Nani did on the first goal, where he finds Mueller on the back post, it's just a simple play. It's not a complex setup. It's just two guys who are a little bit quicker than their opponents and maybe fitter at the end, being able to push things on and just wearing them down and eventually getting their reward.
And just to go on off of what you said, Doyle, as match winners, like Miami doesn't have a match winner. Pizarro could be, but he was coming off the bench. And so when you look at that starting 11, the attacking players, there's no match winners there. You're not going to make a playoff run with that current attacking four. So I do know and predict that Miami is going to bring in those players to have those match winners. But as we speak right now, they're non-existent.
Enough from us. Let's talk to a member of the Black Players for Change, someone who is down on the field during this demonstration. Our AT&T call to the field, a ETR best 11. Probably our number one striker, Kai Kamara, our favorite guest. Kai, thanks for coming on.
Yo, that's the way you say that, and I saw two other strikers in the room. Like, what?
You know, I was thinking the same thing, Kai. I would
show up every week.
I said, Kai, Where is he going with this?
Okay, let me just say this.
Of course, Kai comes, and it's like, oh, well, yes, of course.
Yeah,
so let me see how it is.
Thank you.
Let me just say this real quick. Kai, clearly relaxed and comfortable in his room, nice and isolated by himself down in Orlando, so he doesn't have to wear the mask, which is fantastic, because then we could see that beautiful smile. And I said that because I'm playing a classic 4-4-2 USA against Spain. Okay. Kalen's out on the wing.
Yeah,
we're going back to Chicago Fire days. Charlie's stretching the line. Kai's dropping in.
And I was like, I'm a right midfielder now.
No, right back.
We don't want to go all the way to the back. Don't put me back there.
Attacking right backs. All right, go ahead.
Oh, man. Maybe I should step out. I ruined the air horn earlier in the show, too. It's been a tough performance from me. Kai, we brought you on because we love you.
No, actually, we were given one of the guys that really helped us out with the protests yesterday, Tunde, some stick, because his air horn did not go off when the 2 minute, it kind of went like it didn't like really sound. Oh. Like, so we were like, hey man, we're all waiting for you. What happened, man? It's like, I pressed it, but I didn't want to press it again. You know? Yeah. So you're not the only one messing up with an air horn. Don't worry.
That makes me feel better. I told you guys, I'm ready to go in Orlando. I'm already sweating up here in New York. But Guy, take us through everything that's built up to that moment. It was powerful. Before the game, Orlando against Miami. Take us through the conversations. I don't know if it started when you got to Orlando, when the Black Player Coalition and now Black Players for Change started. So what led up to it?
Yeah, no, it's again, it was a beautiful moment, you know. And to me, to go out there, not just about myself, but, you know, just to start before I go back to the start, is to see like a Robin Fraser, you know, Zach Thornton and Ezra Hendrickson, and, you know, seeing all these guys, Carlos Ramosa, these guys that have been part of this league for so long as players. And they never, you know, got a chance. Not that they were forced to do something that they didn't want to do, but they never got a chance to do something like, you know, like this yesterday. And they were all out there and, you know, looking at us and saying, you know, like, thank you. Like, this is good. This is powerful. To me, that's what, you know, hit more than just being out there with, you know, the present players of MLS, the present Black players of MLS, because it's not about us. You know, I know there's been a lot of players that's come through this league and a lot of players that, you know, didn't get the positions as these, you know, four or five Black ex-players and coaches and staffs that I just called their names, you know, didn't get to be, you know, what they wanted to be or what they wanted to give back to MLS, you know. So it's really one of those. When we came together first as the coalition and now, you know, the Black Players for Change, it was really about what are we going to do to give back? What are we going to do? And also, you know, try to mingle with the MLS, because this is what we know. This is the people, the organizations and the staffs that we know, you know, what changes can we make, you know, in the inner MLS, then trying to, you know, reach outside and see what we can, you know, affect inside America. So we talked about this. This was definitely one of our priorities, to make sure that when we do come to Orlando, we were going to do something, you know, solidarity with everyone, all the Black players in the league, which, again, there's echoes of saying maybe one or two players from that's not Black players that really reached out to us and really wanted to stand with us, you know, arm in heart. And we respected them. We told them thank you. And it's nothing against, you know, any other players in the league, but we just wanted to capture one moment of all the current Black players and staff that's inside of the MLS. You know, can we have this one moment together so we can appreciate what it is to be Black in this league? And also to show, you know, solidarity that everything that's going on around America and in, around the world, that, you know, us as, you know, MLS players and staffs, you know, we stand with what's going on, and hopefully, you know, change will come by, you know, by us standing together and hoping that, you know, one day that a lot of things will change and it will change for better.
How did that demonstration come to be? Because, you know, watching it at home, I did not expect to see it. I thought there was going to be some sort of protest, but not to that level and not to that extent where I was deeply touched. I watched it and I had goosebumps. Like, I was deeply affected. I had tears in my eyes. It was a beautiful thing, like you said. How long did that conversation last as far as planning it the way it came out? And what are the kind of the short-term goals for Black Players for Change?
Yeah, no, we have a really good group of guys, and also we do pass on the information to the rest of the, you know, the Black player pool. We've spoke to the MLS for once. You know, the conversation was had with the Commissioner Don Garber before, and some of the players that I just mentioned, coaches and staffs and GMs, were able to have a conversation to make sure that we all plan this correctly and plan it right. And we didn't. It's not about, again, any kind of negative things that somebody must have heard or saying, okay, we're going to have a protest where we're not going to play a game or we're not going to do this. No, this was a peaceful, silent protest that we wanted to do. Again, it was really about just having this moment, to capture this moment for us all to appreciate, you know, who we are, and for us to send a message, a positive message out there. And it was good, because there was so many thoughts of saying, should we say this? Should we do this? Should we do this? But we felt like the group of guys that we've had, you know, with Justin Morrow and, you know, Sean Johnson, Jaleel Alibaba, Ray Gaddis, and, you know, I mean, there's all Bill Hamid and all the guys, you know, Carval, who did the shirts for us, and Quincy Americo, who's not, you know, in the league, but also played so much of a big role into this. So we had, just imagine all these guys together and bumping heads and, you know, trying to put something good together to make sure that, you know, it was all about togetherness. That's what it was. And yet, at the end of the day, when everything was put together and we brought all the players in these rooms and we talked about it, it was just powerful. And everybody was so positive about what we're going to do. And nobody came up and said, you know, no, we should do this or we should say this because I'm pissed off that this happened and this has happened. Because we all know what it is. We all know what equality we're trying to go for, whether it's inside our league or outside our league, inside America. So I really respect and I believe in these brothers and what the goal that everybody does have and everyone's input that we bring in together. And hopefully, again, yeah, it's a perfect name, you know, Black Players for Change, because hopefully, you know, we do see that change. Hopefully that the many players or the future players or the future people or staffs or anyone that's trying to get opportunities to work around the MLS can have those opportunities. But, you know, we open this way and something that's building that will impact the lives of the next, you know, Black kids or whoever it's in, I don't know, in Compton, California, that never played soccer but can see some of these things and can idolize some of us now and want to play soccer, you know, to show them that there is a path, there's a pathway to everything.
Was the fists in the air kind of an ode to the 1968 Olympics with Tommy Smith and John Carlos? Okay.
Definitely. We know what's going on around the world. We know all the different people in sports teams and different protests and everybody taking the knee. And, you know, big thanks to not really thank you, but, you know, in honor to Colin Kaepernick and what he did. But we looked at it as being athletes and being, you know, I want to say actually Earl Edwards was one of the persons that do know someone that helped in correlations to the protests that went on back in the Olympics. And so, you know, who came in and lectured us about arranging that for those guys back then. And we felt like this is the right time, you know, to stand up as athletes and standing up in a quiet sense of just doing our fist and put it back in the air with the gloves to just show, you know, that we don't forget where we come from and we don't forget the people that actually stood, you know, for something that's right. And hopefully that's the same thing we're trying to do now, to stand up for what's right.
Kai, we all saw this moment on, you know, national TV, and it's, you know, it's been posted all over the world. But I also, before this time, you guys individually have been going to protests in your own communities. I know, looked like you had gone with your entire family to a peaceful protest or a die-in. Can you take us through your experience going to that, and also just the experience of maybe the moments that exist for the Black Players for Change before you all came together in Orlando?
Yes, it was. I think it's really that, because we all started seeing each other on Instagram, everybody posting and everybody going out to different communities, everybody being part of these protests going around. Again, there's a pandemic going on, but, you know, there's been a lot of athletes and mostly us, you know, soccer players, MLS players that's been involved in this and very strong about it. So when the group came about on Instagram because of everybody seeing each other and seeing what we're doing, it was a no-brainer for us to start something and start to bring everybody together, because we do know each other. We see each other at games and we say, hello, what's up? After games, we party together. But it's not really just about that. Now it's about, you know, how can we use our platform to make a difference? So I got to be honest, it's been, you know, I actually said 100 miles an hour and Justin Morris said, no, 1 million miles an hour since we actually did form this group together, because it's just been going and going and we can see so much positive of what we're doing. But, you know, myself being in Denver, Colorado, I always wanted to be part of these things. I wanted to go out there. Obviously, I didn't want to take my family all the time because, again, it was loud, it was wild. But I went home and I spoke to my wife about it. I knew she wanted to go, but again, we don't have anybody at home to keep the kids. And I was like, the kids should be part of this, because hopefully if this year is a year that's going to, you know, help and change for something that when they grow up, you know, some things that we're looking back on and saying, okay, that change back in those times. So they can have those too and say, during those times, you know, my dad, my mom took me to that, and that those were the times that things changed. So I took them out there, and I didn't know what effect it would have on them, to be honest with you, Kaylin, because 2 days later, I'm home, we're barbecuing, and Kendrick, my son, 3 years old, I hear him behind me. He's like, Dad, I can't breathe. And I was like, what? I look back, and he's laying on the floor with his hands behind his back telling me, I can't breathe. I picked him up and just hugged him.
And oh, man.
They repeat the stuff. Yeah, they repeat the stuff over and over. And I'm like, I don't regret taking them at all. I just thought they were too young. But these things are things that's going to be in their mind. And Kieran also will say, every time we're watching and every time I'm talking to the group of the Players for Change, when we have meetings, and she always asks me, oh, are you in the meeting with those guys that you guys are going to do the thing? And I'm just like, okay, wow. They do know those things and they do keep it in their head. So, you know, I'm really proud to say I did get my family involved, and it's a good thing because they learn, even though they're so young, but they learn. And if those little memories stay with them, I'm happy about that.
Amazing stuff. And to the point of how much work this is going to be, Tommy Smith and John Carlos was 1968, and we're still having the same demonstrations and fighting the same battles. I'm curious, though, you mentioned Colin Kaepernick, and you guys would all know way better than me, but when he took a knee, I talked to some people around MLS, and everyone felt like they wouldn't be accepted if they did it, or they wouldn't be supported by fan base, by front office, in their team. You were in the league. What was the conversations like, and is it different than where it is now, or is it that the players just said, enough is enough, and we're going to speak out no matter what it is?
Yeah, no, it's different, you know, because now it's acceptable everywhere. It's almost kind of feels like the opposite. When you don't take a knee, you hopefully might be the people that they question. But to me personally, when that happened back then, you know, I thought to myself, I'm like, man, my following is not as big. You know, I need LeBron. I need, you know, Kobe. I need these people that's so much bigger to follow what this guy has done. You know, because here's one guy or two guys that were getting punished for something that they believed in that was, you know, I thought personally 100% was so peaceful. I had a conversation with it on my team. I go, I can't believe it. I mean, yes, we're playing soccer. Soccer is not the biggest, you know, sports in America. Obviously, we're growing. I was like, but imagine if everybody else that's so big can follow what this guy is doing. He's not out there, you know, causing violence or anything like that. He's not out there saying it's against, you know, the flag or anything like this or the national anthem. And he just explained what he did, but he's getting so much stick for it. So that's why today, when, you know, all this is going on, I'm sure he's proud of what's going on, but kudos to somebody like that. Again, just like, you know, rest in peace to George Floyd and the family. But for some other life to be sacrificed for the rest of the world to finally then wake up and say, hey, you know, it's time we all feel the same pain that, you know, all these other families over and over has been feeling. It's sad, but, you know, again, hopefully these are the things that help change, you know, where we're going. And that's the thing we're looking for, just change.
We on this show have, you know, have the opportunity to bring someone on like you. And we've talked to Sean Johnson and other members of this group, to talk to the fans. And you have a chance on social media, every opportunity to talk to the fans. But, you know, the reason for these protests is to put it in people's minds, to put in their put the conversation in their lives consistently. What do you want fans to do? What do you want them to take away? You know, what can they do to try and help be a part of the solution?
Yeah, I've played on, you know, obviously numbers of teams in the MLS, and the initiative of the MLS and what's been, you know, said all over and over in stadiums, you know, it's been good, you know, no discrimination and stuff like that. And, you know, racism is not tolerated in the stadiums. I think it's good. And it's really about, it's simple. Obviously, you hear it all the time. If you hear something, say something, you know, and that's what it is. Like, I don't just want to be an athlete. You know, I don't just want you to look at me and say, yeah, I just don't want to entertain you just as an athlete, as a black athlete. You know, I'm human too. Like, don't just accept me when I'm in the stadium, you know, or you see me on social media. But again, when I do walk around, I'm just like you, I'm human. So if we can continue to pass that message around, and people that are not knowledgeable about, you know, the other race, it's really, again, it's time for everyone to listen, and time for everybody to ask questions. And that's fine. Let's ask questions. Let's not be shy about it. You know, instead of, there's so many, you know, great, you know, black athletes that's play this game, and maybe you were accepted just as an athlete, but not really people remembering, you know, you for anything else, maybe your charisma, or, you know, a father figure, you know, brother, whatever it is, but they just looked at you as, yes, that guy. So to me, to the fans, it's really, which I've appreciated mostly, most of the places I've played. Yes, I've gotten some chance, but it's actually been outside of America, not in America. But, you know, to them, it's, you know, continue to be, you know, continue to be positive, but not just accept us when we're entertaining you, but also when we do come off that field, or, you know, the arena or whatever it is, you know, to accept us the same way that you do cheer for us when we're on the field or arena.
Kai, one thing I noticed from the video you guys put out the night before the protest was the different places that people had come from, the different languages you speak. I know there's also different religions, and maybe in some ways there's more diversity within the scope of blackness in soccer and Major League Soccer than even some other sports here in the United States. Why did you guys feel like it was important to put that out, and how within the group is it maybe different, but then also the same?
Yeah, no, it's great. You know, somebody like it was about Kendall, you know, Kendall Austin being from Costa Rica. And then, you know, you have Torres too, that's done there. And then you have all these different guys. That's the thing. That's why it's not just the color of your skin, but I was saying there's so much behind you. You know, I can look the same. I can look as dark as somebody else, but that person might not speak English at all. You know, but again, when you do walk down the street, you're still black. You know, we're still termed as the same way and stuff like that. So to us, it's so amazing, because again, it's America. It's a melting pot. It's people from so many different backgrounds, as you said, religions. I'm Muslim. I was a Muslim immigrant refugee, and now a U.S. citizen. You know, so it's like, what else could I be? And black all the time. Sorry about, you know, about that. Not to forget. But when you think about all those things, and soccer being so international, the most diverse sport that you can really say, you know, around the world, and the World Cup does speak for itself. It's, I mean, the video is, it's a video of a message that we sent out, but it just explains really what this sport of soccer does, and the amount of background and different people, nationalities, and, you know, race that it does really bring together. But here we were showing just, you know, one background of saying, okay, yes, it's all black players of the league, but guess what? They were all from different parts of the world, England and this and that. But at the same time, when you look at all of us, what do you see? It's a black man, you know?
Kai, you have a head coach in Robin Fraser, one of the few black coaches in the league as well. Have you had conversations with him about the history of the league, history of the sport in this country? What have those conversations been like?
Yeah, actually, when I met Robin the first time, because I've heard so much about Robin, you know, again, I don't think it's a good thing, because that means makes me really old in this league. But yeah,
experience.
First time I met him, first, you know, I said, "Hey, you're lucky you retired too early, because I would have been running you, you know." So I'm trying to break the ice.
That's an opener.
You're lucky. I retired, because I would have kicked you a few times, you know.
Yep. Back then, you could get away with it.
We talked about his background, because I always knew that, you know, he was from Jamaica, and so that's one of the other questions I asked him, because, you know, those are the things that connects, you know, people together sometimes. So I said that, and he told me about, you know, his family background from Jamaica, but how long he's been in America and all that stuff. And I was like, good. I haven't really talked to him about, again, being the one, or probably the, you know, most successful black coach in America. We haven't really gotten into that, or tried to ask him to tell me more about, you know, the struggles and not struggles. you know, but because he's such a good coach and what he does. So I try to just accept the mentality of soccer that he does present, you know, and not really try to dig into the background of the struggles or maybe, you know, positions or this or some things that he could have gone through. And he's a good guy that way. And I'm not just saying this, but it's not like he's coming to you and telling you, okay, or giving you opportunities to think, okay, because, you know, you're black and I'm black and giving you that. And I definitely do not smell that from a guy like that. He wants you to know, just like I mentioned before, him for what he does, you know, saying, okay, this is what I do. This is what I'm good at. And I'm going to inject this, which is soccer. That's what he's good at, really good at, and injecting that in the rest of the players around. And it's kudos to him, you know. Again, we're always going to say, yeah, Robin is one of, you know, the only black coaches in the league. But hopefully at some point that will change. It would just be named as, you know, just Robin Fraser, a head coach.
And you alluded to it, one of the best soccer coaches you've had. Where does he rank among the coaches you've played for? Because you have had such a lengthy career and you've played for many coaches. What's his growth been like from the start? Since he's come in to now, I mean, during the course of this whole quarantine isolation, what has he done to help continue to grow the team under his new philosophy and culture?
Knowledge, seriously. Because, you know, when we had the 3 months off, you would think, you know, you're just off. But we were doing homework. We were having Zoom meetings. We were sending, you know, games and videos to analyze them and in the ways and style that we want to play. And we were actually being the coaches, breaking it down and bringing it back to the group and explaining it, you know, and then he would come back with his input, you know. But it's just his knowledge, the thing that he knows, you know. It shocks you a bit, because I've heard so much about him, you know, Chivas USA and obviously at Toronto with the success that they had over there. But then now I'm finally seeing that. Yes, I've been around, and I'm not going to rate the coaches. I'm not going to do that. I've been around, but if we win a championship, I bet you I'll rate him number one. I tell you that right now, because that hasn't happened, you know. But no, his knowledge of the game, and he speaks to the younger players the right way, because when he can deliver the message that he wants to the younger players, and it does happen, and they can buy into it, that's where the success is going to come from.
Kai, I wonder, we've alluded to it a couple of times. You've been in the league a little while. You're still pouring in goals. You score goals everywhere you go, but you do get moved on. Do you think that that would be the case if you were a white player? Do you think the perception of you or you, the reality of your career has changed because you're black?
I never looked into it that way. The only one I looked into before was, what would my career have been if I would have played for the U.S.? That's the only way I've looked into it. Not to say, you know, because I'm black, but just if I would have played for the U.S. You know, obviously I made the decision to go back and play for Sierra Leone in 2008. And during those times, my Bob Bradley was around. I remember Ziggy, you know, rest in peace to my dad. That's what I would call him. And he had a conversation with me and says, you know, they're looking into you. What do you think for the Olympic team or something? I was like, Ziggy, I'm really looking to, you know, go back to Africa. I left home a while back, so I really look forward to going back. And he's like, yeah, well, just make your decision. So that's really how I look at it, you know, more of if I would be in the national team. I enjoy everywhere I go and play and score goals. You know, to me, it's just, I've been blessed to come from Sierra Leone, you know, a small town of Kenema, and be blessed to have this opportunity to do what I do, you know, played around and with, you know, even these two forwards in this group right now. So
I think I'm an outside midfielder now. I let it go. Yeah.
don't worry, because when I'm in there, if you're outside mid, it's going to be more assists.
It's good. I know, man. I played with you. I just lob them up. Yeah.
Yep.
Alley-oop.
So, Kai, it's great. So when I had those chances, I don't think about that. I just want to go to the teams that I do go to and say, if a team wants me, you know, I'm always looking at the positive side. Say, listen, okay, it didn't work here. Guess what? Another team wants me. That means I'm doing something good. That's just the way I look at it.
Kai, looking at the tournament, you guys, I've been seeing a lot of people picking Colorado to go far in the tournament, or I don't even know if we can really count you as a sleeper anymore in some ways. But I guess when you look at the group, you've got a nice blend of players with real experience like yourself, but then also this young crop of talented players coming up too. And Robin's come in and done a fantastic job. What's the mood like in the group, and how are you guys feeling heading into your opening match?
It's good. It's positive, to be honest, because I mean, it's been a long time, you know, but it's tough too. I have to be honest, because we haven't played games, no scrimmage, no nothing, you know. This is like, to me, I'd say this is preseason scrimmages, you know. I don't know, everybody else gonna be mad at me, but that's how I look at it, because we haven't done any, you know. We play an inner squad and we're training and this, but your first game is gonna be a game that counts, but you're not gonna play another team. So it's tough, but our group is, again, we have Salt Lake, was, you know, our rival neighbors, and Minnesota, and obviously Sporting Kansas City, which I know for sure because I know Peter really well, that he's coming here to win this tournament. So it's a tough group that we have. But yeah, our coach is definitely, he's given us the recipe to go far in the tournament, you know, not just looking right away, say we want to go win it. He's definitely put some stuff together to say, if we do this well, we will go far in this. And obviously that's what we want to do, go far in the tournament, but he's not giving us saying we're going to go win the tournament.
Kalen said it, Colorado Rapids, one of the, dark horses for the whole thing. Everyone's excited to watch you guys get going. You will kick off on Sunday. There's a lot of soccer coming up over the next month, so a lot to look forward to for everyone. And the Black Players for a Change, you can follow them on any social media platform. As we've heard, over the next month, they're going to start to roll out what they're looking for, some of the initiatives and all the things they're working on in a powerful moment to open up the tournament. And Kai, we always appreciate you taking the time to come on. My number one striker. Kai.
I need them goal celebrations. Let's go. I need some big
I'll
ones.
Do my stanky leg. I'll do my stanky leg right now, or my headband twist, you know.
Yes. Give it to me all. Dude, I need five celebrations in one.
Kai's gotta make up for the last 4 months.
Strikers having their own signature celebrations. That's the best, man. So Charlie will be known for his little, you know.
Freak.
And then, you know, Kalen's got that little twist. I got the heart shaped hand. So, but thank you guys. Seriously, thanks for hanging out. And I'm happy I did it in my room so I didn't have to wear a mask, you know?
Yep. Now every player will want to do the same, and we will love it. It'll be great. Our AT&T Call the Field with Kai Kamara. Kai, good luck the rest of the way, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks so much, as always, to Kai Kamara for taking the time to talk to us. Of course, as I said, follow the Black Players for Change on every social media platform, and there'll be stories coming up on MLSsoccer.com. as well about what they're doing. Let's shift into the tournament. Let's start with the big news, of course. During the period from July 7th to 8th, 1,888 players, coaches, referees, club staff, league staff, and other individuals who are part of the MLS's back tournament delegation at the host hotels in Florida have been tested for COVID-19. Of that group, 4 individuals tested positive, all coming from 2 different clubs. That is the story, and we will get those updates every day or two from MLS. And of course, since our last show, 2 huge pieces of news regarding COVID-19. FC Dallas was forced to withdraw from the tournament right as we finished recording on Monday, and then announced about an hour or two ago. Nashville SC now will also withdraw from the tournament because of the positive tests in those teams. So we hope for all the best for everyone who has tested positive. We hope that everyone out there continues to do what you're supposed to do, wear a mask, and do what you can to avoid the spread of this virus even further. The one piece of soccer information that comes out of that is, because of the teams being left from the tournament, Chicago Fire will now move from Group A to Group B. There will be 4 teams in every single group across the board. The schedules will be moved around a little bit, and all of that's coming out on MLSsoccer.com, where you can check for what's coming forward. But Doyle, I'm curious, for the Chicago Fire, they didn't see this coming. They went from that wild group of chaos where it was 6 teams and a bunch of new coaches to now Group B alongside Seattle, San Jose, and Vancouver. What does this do for their potential to get out of the group?
I think it does make it more straightforward for Chicago, because you look at this group and Seattle are clear favorites for all the obvious reasons. I thought Vancouver played well in the first couple games of the season, but they're missing like their top 4 forwards. So given that, and given the fact that, you know, defensively you kind of still question whether or not they're going to be frail, okay, Vancouver is a team that you should go out and expect to beat in Seattle or in San Jose. Nobody struggled more than San Jose the first two games of the season. So in terms of competitive balance, I do think it makes it easier and more straightforward for the Fire, but the Fire are a team that are like almost an expansion team in a lot of ways. They have two new DPs or three new DPs in Robert Berich, Gaston Jimenez, and Ignacio Aliceta, who we haven't even seen yet, hasn't played a minute, but I think he'll be starting on the left wing. Alvaro Madrón, the TAM central midfielder from Spain, I thought he was very good in the first two games. You have Mauricio Pineda, who was excellent at deep mid, but then dropped back and played in center back when Jimenez arrived against the Revs. And I think center back is actually the right spot for Pineda. And like, it's just a lot of stuff is in the air. A lot of stuff has to come together quickly. But over the first two games of the season, Chicago Fire were fun. Chicago Fire played good soccer. Like, they were still gappy at the back. They still allowed more chances, but like, at least as a neutral, that's fun to watch. But like, they played with intent, right? They played with purpose, and there weren't a lot of teams coming out of the gate and playing like that. So I'm actually pretty jazzed on the Fire. I want to see what happens to them in this format with Rafael Vicky as the head coach. He has a very clear way that he wants to play, and he seems to have, for the most part, he seems to have players who have bought in and who can execute it.
So for the Chicago Fire, they moved to Group B. They are an Eastern Conference team.
The only thing I would add to that is, I don't know how much preparation goes into a tournament like this because you just don't have much time, but it does make the window smaller to be able to game plan for your opponents. So to switch last minute like this, and suddenly I listened to Jim Curtin's post game today, and he was talking about some of the ways that they were watching NYCFC and delivering that message to the team. Now, those teams may be a little more known, and look, I think everybody pretty much knows who the Seattle Sounders are at this point and what you might be up against. But
and they played the first week of the season.
Yes, that's true. That will help them as well. But for a new manager that doesn't have a ton of time in MLS, I think that will be a challenge that Chicago has to overcome.
And so I agree with that to the extent that if Chicago was a team that we all expected to win it, it would be a problem. But if you're Rafael Vicky, you're a brand new coach, you have a brand new roster, you have zero expectations, who cares who you're playing? Make sure that your guys are out there and are just focused on executing your game plan at the highest level possible. And if you lose 3-2, oh well, it's back to the drawing board. Nobody really expected anything different than that from the Fire anyway. I think Fire fans would be happy if the team just played well, even if they ended up going 3-0.
Kevin, so that response?
I think it would be not the right move to walk into the locker room and say to your team that you don't worry about the other guys. We'll just worry about ourselves and go out and have fun. Let's entertain Doyle today.
I think Andrew Wiebe has taken over Charlie Davies' body, and he's just trying to stretch this segment
Charlie,
as long.
Charlie, I see what you're doing, man. You're trying to do this with Kai too.
I'm just trying to see where you guys are, heading. Yeah. It seemed like good back and forth. I wanted to promote it.
I agree in the sense that the expectations aren't there for the Fire necessarily to go on and win the tournament.
Wow, Kaylin, you're going really long on this segment.
Yeah. Well, it's quarantine.
Kaylin feels
we've debated the best teams of all history for the last 16 months. So you gotta give me some time to get back to
2020 Fire fit in that. I mean, come on.
So on that note, I would like to add this one little piece, which is the Chicago Fire have now moved into a Western Conference group. They will remain an Eastern Conference team, as will Nashville for the rest of 2020 when the season continues after this competition. On that note, now let's break down Jonathan Bornstein at left back, overlaps in every little piece of the Chicago Fire. Just kidding, Chris.
Too much fun, man.
Chris, keep your pants on for just a minute. I want to ask one more question here before we look forward to the weekend, which is, we saw NYCFC versus Philly, which was the first 9 a.m. game of the tournament, which was a huge talking point coming in. This weekend, we'll see our first 10:30 p.m. local time kickoffs, which is pretty unprecedented for teams as well. Charlie, take us inside a little bit as a player, what the process is like. One, shifting from game time to game time, and two, which one would you rather have? I thought the game Philly-NYCFC was a higher quality than I expected at 9 a.m., a little more intensity, but I've never actually had to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning and play a professional soccer game.
Yeah, neither have I. I think the last time I remember waking up for 9 a.m. was like under 14s, maybe under 12s.
So, Chuck, you didn't play in the reserve? You never played in the reserve league?
No.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
What? I mean, geez, what a life. Yeah. I played in some MLS games at 9 a.m. with no fans, similarly. And it's not easy because the pregame meal is like at 6 a.m. Well, reserve games, you'd be lucky if you had like a protein bar. But
I've heard stories. So
yeah, but it's a challenge for sure.
It's a challenge. And, you know, for us spectators, 9 a.m. games, amazing. You wake up, you have your breakfast, you have a coffee, you can watch some live action for the first time in 3-4 months. Yeah, count me in. Great. But as a player, especially an older player, a veteran who needs a little bit more time to get ready physically and mentally, then you got to wake up 5 a.m. and do your you know, hamstring rolls on the roller, stretching, the massage. For me, I'm taking a, you know, 45-minute massage. And then you got to eat breakfast. You got to have, you know, you can't have a normal breakfast. You got to be a little bit on the lighter side.
By the way, this is Charlie's extra time, pre-extra time routine as well still.
Yeah, his massage clause for the show is, it's a huge rider.
The guys that need taping. Some guys do both ankles. I've seen them do, you know, so the knees, the hamstrings, all that type of tape. No, like, no, thank you. You get to the match. There's no fans on top of it. You guys, you know, you're just tying your shoes. You're looking up. You smell the morning dew. You're like, oh, this isn't training. This is minute one to minute 90. It's full go. And you're not even match fit yet. There's no sharpness. You got to work that as well. You saw the guys cramping, trying to get through it. And it was, you know, it's not one or a couple guys. There was like 4 or 5, 6 guys cramping in there and just trying to tough it out. And then you throw in that heat. Give me those 10:30 games all day. I get to sleep in. You have a big breakfast. You relax in the room. You can take a bath. You can have massages at any time during the day.
I was about to say, Charlie on the 10:30 games getting 3 pregame massages.
Three on the day. And then, you know, you have that build up right, and then you get I like playing at night with the lights. That gives you a little bit more. There might not be fans, but it's dark. It's not like you're going to be checking out the fans anyways. You got the lights on you. It's a little bit cooler. Give me that all day, and I'll take a 2 a.m. bedtime to sleep till 10 or 11 all day. Give me that for sure.
But we still like watching the morning ones.
Yeah.
I love watching it.
Well, it's one of the things you don't think about, which is World Cup in the morning, European soccer in the morning. It's great, but it's not morning for the players, so they don't notice. We're all used to watching games at 9 a.m., but no one's used to playing them at 9 a.m. Kalen, I wonder for you, Philly gets the win 1-0. Ali Bedoya with the goal sets the table pretty much in the group, especially now with the teams leaving the group. You will actually play everyone head to head. So it's not just this mystery of what the schedules will look like. Billy was talked about as a potential favorite coming in, but still some question marks as well. What'd you take away?
I picked them to win the tournament, actually.
Kalen's having a day.
Yeah. And I had a feeling that I still have a feeling that this first match would decide who would finish top of the group, with just NYCFC and Philly being the two best teams for me. And the reason why I chose Philly, at least to begin with, was the continuity. If you look at Group A, even before this whole shift has happened, they were the only team with a returning manager at all. And the way that Jim Curtin has been able to build this team, they've gotten more points successively over the years. They've got more experience. Even their young players now have been, you know, really bloodied in the tournament and in the playoffs now. So you'll see the growth and maturation of a Mark McKenzie or a Brendan Aronson, some of these young guys on the team. And then you saw it also today, the experience, where maybe it's not the prettiest game, maybe it's not all completely up to speed, but then you find a moment and it's who else but Alejandro Bedoya, who just puts it on frame and kind of stays alert and picks up that sort of deflection that comes to him. So I really like this team. They've got some good depth as well. And Jim made the right moves to be able to, you know, even just to keep Martinez, who I thought looked really good, but was kind of on that edge to maybe get a red card. And we know Jim knows his bench, right? That's one thing of like, it's not just a manager with the continuity and understanding, but to read the moment and say, all right, this guy's maybe right there. We know we've got Warren Craval. He can come in and step in and see out this match. You keep 11 guys on the field. That's the experience of knowing, like, it's not just about having depth. It's about understanding the depth and when to use it. So I think this Philly team showed in those small margins, I thought they won the match today. So I'm excited to see what they can do. It's a little different for them.
How much did Jim pay you?
Jim was like just a good vet when I was a young rook. So that's worth more than gold. Yeah. You know? Kalen, I owe that guy big time.
Kalen's having a big day for two reasons. One, Philly gets the win. Two, with Chicago Fire moving to Group B, he could see that dream Philly Chicago Fire final that he's always been waiting for and been dreaming of as the tournament.
He's gonna drop Houston.
Well, we can get there, Charlie, because we've got a big weekend coming up.
Has eliminated them. He's got, you know, he's a Galaxy and LAFC guy. So what can you expect?
Are there other cities in the country? We've got a big weekend coming up, which means, like we like to do on ETR, we can preview the weekend and the games we're looking forward to. Once again, Charlie, would you like to get us started? Is there maybe a Houston game?
I'm looking forward to that Houston LAFC game.
Let's go, Chuck.
You know, Carlos Vela's out, best player in the league, but LAFC have depth. They have big time players. They have players with a lot of potential who now the spotlight's on them to show up and deliver. So I'm interested to see how ready they are for their moment, because this is their moment. Are they going to show? Are they going to show the potential? Are they going to the trust that Bob Bradley and his staff have in these players and are going to give them the keys to say, hey, now is your time. This is your moment. Carlos Vela's out, so pick up the slack. Let's see what you got. Diego Rossi has apparently been doing it in training. Now bring it to the match and let's see what Brian Rodriguez can do on the other wing. And then Houston Dynamo, for me, this tournament fits them. You know, it's just defend.
It's a squad.
Release these guys in the front third. Darwin Quintero, Manotas, and Albert Elise. Just let them run rampant on counterattacks. Then sit back, defend. We saw Philadelphia Union today. It wasn't pretty at all. And I don't know how many times Kasper Schmelko touched the ball. It wasn't that many. But when that moment came for them, they scored. They gave some opportunities up. And luckily for them, the keeper was on today. I mean, that's why you have a guy like Andre in goal, because he can come up with some big saves. I haven't seen him do that all the time. But when he is ready to go, when he's locked in like he was today, it's very tough to beat him. So the Union gutted it out and they weren't sharp. They weren't match fit. But if you can pull performances like this where it's not that great and get results, it does speak a lot of the preparation and what Jim Curtin has done for these guys. So Kalen was right about that. But it's got to be the Houston LAFC match this weekend.
Okay.
That's what you want to
so that was good for. LAFC plays Houston next Monday. I'll give it to Charlie. I don't know that counts as the weekend, but that's fine. I'll take it because you got to talk about Houston. I appreciate that. Doyle or Kalen, would either of you? Oh, Kalen's just gone. So Kalen's good with that. Doyle, would you like to step up and maybe give me a game that's potentially occurring this weekend? There's one on Friday, two on Saturday, and a triple header on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Atlanta Red Bulls game is one that everybody's got their eyes on. And of course, we got Frank DeBoer. But to me, it's Sporting KC versus Minnesota, which is Sunday night, 8 p.m. on ESPN. And these are two teams that took six points from their first two games of the season. Obviously, Minnesota without Ike, we all expect it to be very, very different. So I am very much... Kalen, my God.
Kalen doesn't know he's back. Is the fact
I was trying to figure out where I went.
Yeah, you were gone, but you came back, and then you didn't know you were there.
I am very much interested in seeing if Minnesota can hold up without Ike Opara. Because if you look at their first two games, it was all defending deep and counterattacking, or just being dominant on set pieces, including two goals from Ike. And with Sporting Kansas City, I've said it a million times. We said all decade, imagine Peter Vermees and that system with a big money, big time striker. And that's what they got this offseason with the addition of Alan Pulido. He lived up to that in the first two games. So this Sporting KC Minnesota game, again, Sunday night, 8 p.m. on ESPN, like that is the one. To me, I can't wait to see that game.
Give me DC Toronto too. Fine, if you want me to pick.
Nice. No, Charlie, you don't get to preview another game. You already got your time.
Give me DC Toronto.
DC Toronto, that game, of course, coming up this weekend. As I said, it one game on Friday night, Seattle versus San Jose, with the move of the other game, and then you've got two games on Saturday and three games on Sunday, and that's Saturday starting at 8 p.m. Eastern time on Big Fox. with Atlanta versus New York Red Bulls. That's become one of the great rivalries in Major League Soccer. And the man who will be leading Atlanta out onto the field without Joseph Martinez is, of course, the Dutch legend Frank de Boer. He sat down with Andrew Wiebe earlier this week for our AT&T Call of the Field. So we're going to go to that interview, and then we're going to leave you on your day. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the soccer, and we will see you, as usual, on Monday.
All right, let's welcome the head coach of Atlanta United to Extra Time. Just a heads up for you out there listening or watching. We're recording this on July 7th, and we know things change awfully quickly, so keep that in mind. Frank, welcome to Extra Time.
Thank you very much.
Let's start here. How do you feel in the bubble? What do you think about this tournament overall, whether it be format or location or anything else? Just what are you feeling, man?
Well, it's always exciting, to play for something, and I think it was a good idea, to have like a tournament like this, so that we are playing for something really, that we can win something. So because we were so long out of competition, so I think that was a really good idea. I don't know how it's going to feel after 1 month, of course, I've been in World Cups and Euro Cups, and then this, but this is really in a bubble, and people already, some players didn't saw their wife or child already for 4 or 5 months, lively, of course, with Skype or with WhatsApp, they can see it, of course, or FaceTime. But in life, it's always different, So I don't know what it's going to do mentally with the players, but first of all, I'm excited that we can start playing again.
As a coach, but also as a person, how do you manage this moment with your players, but not just your players, with your staff, with yourself? I mean, what are you guys going through, and what things are maybe you doing differently or thinking about differently than before? Because this is unprecedented.
Yeah, well, when you do, get your license as a manager or coach, there was no, lecture of, what happens when COVID, passes by, and or a pandemic. And yeah, everybody has to adapt, and see what's happening. Of course, mentally, it's going to be really tough for our players. And also what you already said, also our staff members. For example, my Dutch staff members, two of them, they were like 2 months, in their apartment, and of course with the wife, but still didn't see the children. And we spoke with them and they said, okay, I really have to, pump up my energy again. And normally, when I have a break, I'm really excited to start really, and I'm full of energy, but it's a different kind of energy. And they have to fill it up again, I guess, I think. So, but I think with the players is the same. And but what I see, the training, what I see, the experience, what they're doing, and it's looking good, but we have to wait. Course,
more than 100 days off, and we don't get that in an off season here, and sometimes we think our off season is long. How close to 100% can players, can teams, can Atlanta United get? What can you control? How can you get your team there?
Well, I cannot speak about other teams. I can only speak about our team, and we are not 100%, that's for sure. That we have also, we had also 2 positive cases during our trainings period, preparation season. And so when that happens, you have to make like 2 steps back. You go in small group training again, no contact. And then, so when you have scheduled, for example, the next day 11 against 11, really now physical stimulus for the team, suddenly, you have to make a whole different schedule again. And 5 days later, we have like a staff member who was positive, but was false positive. But that has consequences also for the next day. So, all those security measures we took in place. And I think that's very important because, the health of our players and the people who work for Atlanta is the most important thing. But, right now we didn't reach to 90 minutes, to play 90 minutes against each other. So then, and we are like 4 days away to our first game. So I cannot say that we are 100% prepared for the first match, but we're getting closer and closer, and hopefully, you know, with the rotations that we can do and the five subs, that we can have a solid performance against Red Bull.
That's the first game, as you said there, Red Bulls, Atlanta United for the five stripes, 8 p.m. Eastern on Fox on Saturday. We saw 3-4-2-1, and I know coaches don't like to get bogged down in formations, but how do you think this team best sets up, in particular without Josef Martínez? What do you see in your mind's eye when you see Atlanta United at their
best? You know, everybody was, of course, focused on Josef. He was a demanding player, of course, in our lineup, and everybody feared him, and we used him also really well, and of course he delivered always, you know. But yeah, now other players have to stand up, and we're gonna see who's gonna be, you know. Is it PT, is it Barco, or Mateus Rosetto, who's new, of course, or other players. So I think that's how it goes in top sport, especially in soccer. You know, somebody, you know, an important, influential player can have an injury, and other players have to step up, and it gives you another vibe. And as a coach, you have to try to catch that vibe, and that they get the confidence that they can also do without Josef.
When are Pity and Barco at their best, in your opinion, and how do you keep that them in that position for as much time as possible? Like, when do you see the best out of those?
Well, you know, they are creative players, so you don't. They have to know, of course, their roles, but they have to have in those roles a lot of liberty and creativity, and I think that's important for those kind of players, and gives them the basic things, and that's normally defensively, and you know, with the creative mind, they can do whatever they want, and I think that's why they are such good players.
Have you seen Barco take a step forward this year? The first two games, he was not a different player, but a more effective player, let's say, than he was his previous time with Atlanta United?
Yeah, I think Barco is further than last season. He's, he's older, you know, of course, more experienced, but also his body, you know, it's more, you're full of growing person. I think it's the same with George Bello, for example, right now. You know, I always called George Bello, you know, that baby fat, you know, what he still had. You know, last time in Atlanta, he pulled his shit out. And the baby fat is gone, you know, like an 8-pack or something like that. So it means, you know, of course, I was pushing him for that. That is important. But it's, you know, they... Sometimes, you know, they are not growing anymore in the height, you know, but they're more, you know, okay, now it's my muscles going to grow. And I have the same feeling with Bark and also with Bello. And so I think, we can have a lot of joy with both of them, especially, of course, with Barco when he's in form.
You know a little something about being a world-class defender, and Miles Robinson is now a guy you're working with.
Yeah.
Can Miles Robinson reach that sort of world-class international professional center-back level? And how does he get there? How do you help him get there?
You know, on the top level, it's only a small percentage that I can learn him. You know, he's always thinks he, like 95 or 90% has to come from himself. And the good thing about him, he's really eager to learn, and he's really a professional. And I give him, you know, just the small details, you know. We are, everybody knows how good he's in defending. And if he wants to be a complete player, you know, he has to be comfortable on the ball also. And I think, lately, and maybe because he has confidence, and that's very, for every player, it's very important to have confidence, of course. He made major steps also, you know, when you have the ball on his feet to make good choices. And not only with long balls, but just splitting passes, you know, like the size of passes, like 4 or 5 players in with one pass, they are out, you know, outplayed. And that's key, especially when, you know, a lot of times in the back starts, you know, the first attack. And he doesn't hesitate right now. And in the beginning, he had that. And you give them small details, you know, already, you know already where you want to go to play. And don't show it anymore. Don't, you know, first text it, you know, to the other team that, okay, I'm going to play there. No, already no. And then, you know, with a little bit blindsided, and you play, and suddenly you played out five players. And I think he understands it really fast. And again, he, what I already said, he made major steps forward.
One more for you here, Frank. We know you have a busy day and the media tour goes on for you. I know you were back home in the off season a little bit. When you're sitting down to, you know, have a coffee or an espresso or whatever it is with your friends and colleagues in the Netherlands, and they ask you about your experience with Atlanta and in Major League Soccer, when you're being truly honest, what do you say to them about what you experienced in the last year and a half or so?
Well, that I can everybody recommend it, you know, to who wants to work there, or, you know, to experience the game, especially I think an Atlanta game at home in the in our stadium. Yeah, home stadium, that's fantastic. I think, you know, the good thing of the American League, you know, the MLS, is that everybody can almost win from everybody. And that's a good thing, you know, from the MLS. And it's not for sure that, you know, Barcelona or Real Madrid is going to be champions, or Paris Saint-Germain will be the champion. And every year is going to be a lot of time different teams. And yeah, that makes it exciting. And it's getting, you know, much more popular and popular and, you know, and excited every year. And so I think, yeah, I'm very positive, you know, about it.
We will see what Atlanta United do in the MLS is Back tournament. Frank DeBoer leading the way. Frank, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.